Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about this?
I feel
bathroom?
Like I had to say yes, bedroom? Just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken
care of.
It took forever. And the worst part? Hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
Shop Blinds.com for up to 50% off site-wide and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Mark Reardon.
You know, politicians want to force you to cover your face as a way for them to cover their own asses.
Mark Reardon.
Does the president not know what's going on?
I don't care if you think I'm Satan reincarnated.
The Mark Reardon Show is on now.
Well, and we kind of got to start on a somber note here with everything that's happening, in particular in North Carolina. First, let me say hi to Sue Thomas. Sue, how are you?
Hi, fine.
Got Fred, the Hall of Famer, here as well.
Hey, Mark.
Maybe a little atypical start to the show because they're holding a news conference right now in Fletcher, North Carolina. Look, I'm just going to tell you right now, I know people are coming out of the weekend. You may not have paid extremely close attention to the news cycle because people enjoy their weekends. Even I enjoy my weekend, but North Carolina has been devastated. The
Dang.
Western part of North Carolina, and the level of preparedness was a lot lower than Florida, and that's part of the problem. They just got hammered. They're holding a news conference right now. We're going to dip into this just briefly here.
Location followed by commodities. This morning we brought in 100,000 pounds of water and commodities on a C-17. We've also done 100,000 pounds through our helicopter lifts that we have. We continue to service the area. We've hit eight counties within the region already with commodities. And we're going to continue to push soldiers into the region to help the citizens of the Western North Carolina. Thank you, Governor.
This is Roy
One
Cooper,
of the, major issues
the governor of North Carolina now.
Egress and egress and making sure that we clear roads. We still have some communities that are cut off. Our North Carolina Department of Transportation has been working hard to clear roads and to get roads back open. I'm going to call on our Secretary of Transportation, Joey Hopkins.
Thank you, Governor. Good afternoon, everyone. First of all, our hearts go out to everyone here in Western North Carolina. We have employees that are directly impacted by this, as well as everybody else that has friends and families. We have, at this time, over 300 roads closed.
So he's gonna get into some of the specifics of the road closures. So I'm gonna pull out of this right now. But it is just, look, they're talking about biblical proportions in Western North Carolina, and you have a lot of poor people in Appalachia. You're talking about 100 deaths at this point. I think it's up to 130. Now that's spread across several states, but it is expected that North Carolina probably is going to have more fatalities. And one of the issues was is they, you know, were not quite as prepared as Florida is, because they're not usually in a situation like this with more of a direct hit. So there's all kinds of images that are coming out of North Carolina and Georgia. You still have, you know, millions of people that don't have power in some of these states. This is not unlike what we saw come through Florida 2 years ago, you know, in devastating Sanibel and Captiva, but this seems to be more widespread if you look at some of the devastation. Some of this is reminiscent, Fred, you probably, both of you would agree with this, some of it is reminiscent of what we saw in the early 90s with our flooding here, because you see the amount, well, that's really where the damage is. It's just all the water that washed homes away. And look, I'm looking at an image right now of debris that you don't even see debris like this from a big tornado.
No.
It is like the entire area just got flattened.
Wow. I had no idea. I did not tune in. I mean, I checked in with Steve Jervey to see how he was, and he was fine. And then I saw a Facebook post this morning, a friend of mine in Florida, and she lives on one of those inlets. They've lived there for 20-plus years. She said the most water they get was about halfway up the backyard. The entire house was flooded this time. So you just don't know.
Yeah, well, and then you had one of the voices that we had there is a guy from FEMA. Here's one of the questions. You know, obviously, we know what happened with Katrina with George W. Bush, but where is FEMA on some of this, and what are they doing? You heard someone from the National Guard talk about, you know, flying in water. There are people that need food, water, supplies at this point. And, you know, Fred, we used to, I don't know if we're all desensitized to this, but remember whenever we would have a big hurricane, something would go across Florida or somewhere else, we'd do a big food or supply drive when we were on Camo X. We'd have people show up at parking lots, and everyone's so generous when that happens. I'm not saying that maybe that won't happen in a situation like this. I bring it up only because we seem to be desensitized. Oh, there's another big hurricane or something like that. And in this situation, it's pretty bad. It really, really is bad.
I think we forgot a lot about it ever since the pandemic.
Well, that's
true. I think
true.
Things have always changed since then.
And well, there, yeah.
I think you're right about that. Now, let me highlight something else. And maybe there's a good explanation for this. But I was reading some of the coverage through a variety of sources. And then I went to the FEMA website because people are asking, well, has FEMA been on top of this as much as they should be? I'm in a situation, I don't think anyone would disagree with this. You now have a devastating situation where people's lives have been lost. Their entire, you know, entire being has been affected. This is where the government needs to play a role, and no one's going to throw a red flag. Now, I would throw a red flag on just writing, you know, open-ended checks, and we got into trouble even in the aftermath of Katrina where things were not accountable. But this is where you throw everything at these people and you try to help them as much as possible, whether it's the National Guard, the state government, the South Carolina state government, so they can help, whoever can help. This is where we should play a role. But if you go to this is stunning to me. It really is. You go to the FEMA website, they list three goals on their website, right? You know what the number one goal is?
No.
This is, I thought when I first saw this, I swear to God, I thought it was satire. I thought it was the Babylon Bee or something like that. Goal number one is instill equity as a foundation of emergency management.
Oh my gosh.
Are you kidding me? And then what's awesome is they have these little graphics that are next to, you know, some pictures on the FEMA website. And they have three people on podiums, essentially, you know, raising their hands in the air. One of them's got the wheelchair, but there's only one white chick. And then there's two people of color. And then if you go down to promote and sustain a ready FEMA and prepared nation, you have, and these people don't even have faces. They're actually faceless people, but you see three people of color and one white dude. Tell me that's not virtue signaling right there. So, you know, what do you make of that? Instill equity as the foundation of emergency management. How about help people out no matter who they are and get them, you know, back on their feet again? That's stunning. And I cannot believe that that's even the situation. But in North Carolina and other parts across the South, they're still recovering from what happened over the weekend. It seemed to happen very quickly from our perspective because a week ago, I don't even think we were talking about Helene. We knew something was bubbling up. And then Tuesday, it got to the point where, yeah, DeSantis is holding news conferences and this is going to hit Florida. And then it just happened. And because it happened overnight and in areas that are very, very poor, like Appalachia, we just don't know the extent of the damage. When you see drone coverage, you see some of the planes that have flown overhead, it really, really, you know, doesn't look good. And the image that you're getting from this particular president right now, he's vacationing again. Harris is out there whining and dining the left at coastal fundraisers. This is also funny. There's a picture that was posted to Twitter late Sunday night that makes Kamala look like she's on Air Force Two and her hand is on her head and she's got a pen and she's writing out some notes and stuff like that. And she's got like not an AirPod, but like one of the older iPod headphones. So they have the cord on them is my point.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
But here's what's funny. Look what's missing from that. When you look at that picture of Kamala, she looks like she's studying details and facts and she's got her little headphones in. The headphones are not even plugged into her phone.
Oh, dear.
So people have pointed that out. Look, maybe she had her iPad in her lap or something like that. This is Sister Told You on Twitter. It is perhaps with that in mind. Well, she says basically, look, she gives the background of what happened when George W. Bush was there and says there are a couple of things that I find super annoying about the photo. First, if indeed she really wasn't on the phone, and she says that she's been known to play games with her earbuds before, it's just more fakery on top of fakery from a candidate team who's trying to reinvent her as a great leader just about every single day. Now, here's an idea, and I don't think this is going to happen because there's all this buildup for the vice presidential debate tomorrow night. Here's what I would do. If I'm J.D. Vance, you know what I say? This thing is off tomorrow night.
Exactly.
We got to help people in North Carolina. These are the people that I came from in my roots. We're canceling this Veep debate, and I'm going to go to North Carolina and help these people. And, you know, whatever you have to do, get down, get dirty, get muddy, do whatever you have to do. And don't just do it for a photo op. Do it because it's an important thing to do right now and show leadership.
Yep.
Now, that'll never happen. But I think that would be, and I'm not even talking about it, it would be a brilliant political strategy, I think. It's just the right thing to do.
Correct.
At this point. And I'm not saying it's going to happen, but, you know, sometimes you almost wish that political leaders could be a little bit more creative and say, look, we're going to put this on hold because we have American citizens that are, you know, not only dying, but potentially, I think the death toll numbers here are going to grow quite a bit as well, unfortunately.
Boy, looking at this footage, I can see why.
Yeah. All right. So the story of the day around here is the St. Louis Cardinals. They held a news conference that, Fred, do we know if that's wrapped up yet?
Yeah, it has.
Can you summarize the news conference, Fred? You listened to some of it. Can you summarize what it is?
Change is coming, but not yet.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Essentially, John Mozeliak is going to stay on as president of baseball operations. There's a guy that they hired last year named Chaim Bloom, who is a wizard, they say. But he was brought to assist the organization, but apparently not until this year. They hired him last year. They didn't want him to do anything last year. Why would you want to do that?
Yeah. Right?
He's audited.
Yeah, okay. It took him a year to find out what all the rest of us have known for a couple of years now. That's what's baffling as well. Look, the Cardinals are going to get beaten up by this, and maybe they deserve to be beaten up because I don't exactly know what they're giving the fans right now. Now, let me make this clear. I don't think firing people for the sake of firing them, like if you want to put Ollie Marmol's head on a platter, I don't know if it was his fault or not. I'm not sure you can have an accurate representation of that. But here's Bill DeWitt a little bit earlier here this afternoon.
We've always prided ourselves on drafting and developing our own players. And it's clear that we need to make significant changes to get back to this model. Our baseball decisions going forward will focus on developing our pipeline of players, giving our young core every opportunity to succeed at the major league level.
He talked about Chaim Bloom.
Effective immediately, Chaim Bloom will oversee a reset of our player development system. As part of his assessment this past season, Chaim has developed a plan for improving our player development infrastructure and philosophy. Mo will continue to oversee baseball operations in 2025, which will be his final year. After next season, Chaim will succeed Mo as president of baseball operations, and he has agreed to a 5-year contract beginning next year.
So Mo addressed this today, and he essentially joked a little bit with the media. I know you're not going to like this in your room, but here's where we are. And he talked about this being part of a succession plan that they've been working on for a while. Here's Chaim talking about some of these things.
There's really a lot of different areas. That's what's exciting about this. There's so much opportunity for us to make positive change. I've heard over the course of the year, really good ideas come from within our organization. You know, I've got some ideas from my own experiences. We're going to have new ideas come into the organization and really figure out in all areas how we can make this as good as it can be.
Yeah, it's exciting, except that you should have been trying to figure that out for the last couple of years. And this reminds me a little bit about the Biden-Harris administration, because we're going to do all this new stuff that we haven't done, but with the same people to a certain extent. So I don't know that there's going to be a lot of satisfaction. But Fred, you know what? What could have actually made anyone happy today? Let's say we fire Mozeliak and Marmol. Where does that leave the Cardinals? So I don't know exactly what the plan specifics will be.
Yeah, a rebuild would still be needed.
Well, they made it clear that the payroll is going to go down next year. Now you got a lot of bad accounting on that payroll, too, that will be gone. But Scotty Warman, who is with, of course, Bally Sports Midwest, studio host, good friend of the program, was there. They covered it this afternoon. He's going to join us here in just a couple of minutes. We have Robert Kuttner coming up a little bit later this afternoon from the American Prospect, who talked about some of the polling. We'll get into the whiplash that's going out there, because it is confusing when you look at the national polls compared to some of the state polling. Cusumano was in that room this afternoon. afternoon. He'll have his take on the Cardinals. We'll also talk some NFL football. The Tigers did not play this weekend. They had a bye week and faced Texas A&M, two ranked opponents next Saturday. And I think they're just one-point underdogs at this point. We have Susan Crabtree this afternoon. Have we ever had her on the air?
No,
I know
we
Susan
haven't.
Quite a bit. You know, I've liked her writings for a while. She's currently a national political correspondent for Real Clear, and she's kind of focused in on some of the Secret Service stuff that happened last week and beyond. And then I got several requests about this because last week we featured Dak Cardetti, who is running the campaign for the amendment to the gambling, the sports wagering. And I've been pretty honest about my position on that. I'm going to vote for it. Now, I do admit that there's some questions about how much money will actually go to education. And I sort of positioned it this way. I was around many decades ago when the lottery became legal in Missouri and all this money was promised to education. And then there were a lot of trust issues because we weren't sure that a lot of that money got to education. And when you look at the money involved here and you spread it around, it really isn't that much. And the question would be, well, are people being honest? This will sound terrible. Okay. Just to be clear, I don't care if a penny goes to education. I just want to be able to sports wager. But if you're selling this thing, and that's how they're selling it, they're leading with the education front. You know, this is all to say, I think that's misleading. And I can completely understand why someone would vote against it. You could have someone who completely, this happened with the marijuana issue too. You could be a fan of that particular issue. You could say, look, I want sports wagering in Missouri, but this is very convoluted and deceptive the way they've done it. We'll get into that here in a little bit as well. Plus, an audio cut of the day and a whole lot more. We're off and running here on a Monday edition of the Mark Reardon Show. We haven't even talked about Evolution Festival. Billy.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh. I remember shopping for blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about this?
I feel
bathroom?
Like I had to say yes, bedroom? Just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken
care of.
It took forever. And the worst part? Hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
Shop Blinds.com for up to 50% off site-wide and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Joel, we'll get into all of that coming up as well.
Back to you.
Bill DeWitt III talking about getting fans back in the seats next year.
Yeah, we're working on our game plan. We're doing a lot of work looking at ways to improve and freshen up the game day experience for our fans. We'll see some new things next year in that regard.
I would say improving the game day experience would mean winning more games and competing here in the month of October. But let's get the take of Scott Warman, Bally Sports Midwest studio host, who was dialed into all of this earlier today. He joins us this afternoon. Scotty, how are you this afternoon? Happy Monday.
Doing well, my friend. Yeah, you too. Doing well, my friend. How are you?
So I'm good. Maybe just before we get too into any questions or anything, just lay out what you heard today for the audience that really didn't hear the whole thing. I played a couple of sound bites and summarized a little bit. But what was the overriding message here?
I think the overriding message was, is this organization, as crazy it may sound, because we know that over these decades that a lot of us have been Cardinal fans, have always had one of the best, you know, farm systems, and that's what's made them successful for, you know, decades for the most part, and the Cardinals have fallen behind. And that was the message, not only by chairman of the board, Bill DeWitt Jr., but also John Mozeliak, but Chaim Bloom, who will actually take over the president of baseball operations after this upcoming season in 2025. And so Chaim came in. He's been with the Boston Red Sox most recently, but it was with the Tampa Rays organization for a number of years. And you think about a small market team that doesn't have the big budgets like the Red Sox or the Yankees, Dodgers, et cetera. And you think about their success that they have had with the development and their farm system. And Heim Bloom was right in the middle of that. And the Cardinals, when they brought in a guy like Heim this past January, was part of his consulting was to just look over the whole operation, but specifically the development of this team. And so I think we're going to see overall changes. And that was what was mentioned several times during the nearly 30-minute press conference that they had over at Busch Stadium today. Now, what are those changes? Well, you know, I think from a standpoint of scouting and development, the Cardinals have fallen behind the amount of staffing that they have compared to most teams in Major League Baseball. I don't think they've put in as much money and finances that they have had in years past because they've utilized that part of that money more to the Major League side and signing players and what have you. And I think it goes, you know, not only hiring more people, scouts, coaches, what have you, former players to develop teams, but also my understanding, Mark, is the fact that this team has actually fallen behind with, you know, as we know, a lot of analytics are part of the game, but some of the systems that the Cardinals utilize are behind, you know, some of the other major league teams. So this is pretty much where, you know, they're going to start. And they said not only a change, but this isn't going to be an overnight situation. I think they're telling the fans to be a little bit patient as far as that is concerned.
You did hear that quite a bit today. You know, this is going to take time. And I'm sure you read, and I read from some of the Katie Wu story that was in The Athletic the other day because it was pretty damning. And I want to go to that issue that you just kind of mentioned about staffing. And she put some numbers out there. That was rather shocking when you saw how the Brewers or even some teams outside of the division handle some of the staffing when it comes to player development. We were way down in the numbers, like maybe half as big as some of these other teams, which I think was surprising.
It was. And it's something Brad Thompson and I, we were in the studio. Our own Jim Hayes was over at Busch Stadium, and we kind of discussed that as the fact that, again, just kind of like you and I are just talking at the top, you think about the Cardinals, they're always being considered one of the top farm systems for many, many years. Now, MLB rates these farm systems, and right now the Cardinals are like 19, 20, something like that. But, you know, for the Cardinals, that's very, very unusual. Granted, you can sit there and say, you can argue and say, hey, you know, before the last couple of years, they've always picked high, what have you. But that hasn't stopped the Cardinals in years past from picking high and still developing players that evolve into great players, whether they're with the organization or wind up moving on. And I think that was something else that was addressed by the media when they got involved in the press conference was like, look, you see some of these players that wind up going to other teams and they wind up evolving instead of not having the success here in St. Louis. And, you know, the Cardinals admitted there that was something that was a part of this new change, if you will, to make sure that, you know, you don't have that type of situation where you have a Randy Orosarena who gets dealt and all of a sudden he thrives with the Tampa Rays and you don't have that. So definitely a change in the development, definitely a change in the guard, the face of the franchise. Because let's face it, John Mozeliak has been the face of the franchise ever since Walt Jocketty stepped down as GM back in 2007, 2008.
So he joked a little bit today, just mentioned the people in the room saying, well, you guys aren't going to be very happy with us, but here's what we're doing. And I heard a couple of different references to that. You have a morning, maybe it was yesterday morning, but certainly one of the last couple of mornings, Ben Hockman from the Post-Dispatch wrote a column encouraging the Cardinals to let Mo go. So he's keenly aware of where a lot of the media might be and the fans as well. He's going to kind of play out the contract and do this transition right now. I don't know that the term rebuild was used, but isn't this kind of a rebuild at this point?
Well, Jim Hayes actually posed that question, and it wasn't a rebuild. It was more of a reset is how the term was used.
We're
not using rebuild. We're using reset. But, as Jimmy got done talking to Mo, during our coverage of the after the press conference, is I kind of look at it and think about it. If you're more outside of just a Cardinal fan, you know, just down the street, Doug Armstrong is eventually, you know, reining in his duties, and Alexander Steen, as we found out this summer, former Blues player, won a Stanley Cup, is going to wind up taking over the GM duties. So I kind of look at it sort of from that aspect. Is here you have a guy in Heim Bloom who's now going to have a year to try to redevelop what's going on down in the minor leagues and the development part of the organization whilst learning the X's and O's, if you will, from what the Cardinals do from major league process. I think there are some similarities. And when Mo said, there's not a rebuild, there's a reset. Well, that's the same thing and the same messaging, basically, that Doug Armstrong said. Look, we're trying to reset and retool this team where he wants a quick transition. He doesn't want to go through, 10 years like the Detroit Tigers before you get back into the playoffs. Doug Armstrong's trying to do that with the Blues, where you get back in the playoffs, you hire or you draft great players and you develop them, and then you have a really good hockey team. And that's what the Cardinals are trying to do. And I think ultimately you go 8 blocks down the street and you kind of have pretty much a similar situation as far as I see it.
Yeah, Scott Warman is here from Bally Sports Midwest. So I love the optimistic fans like Robert who tweeted this at me. I have to say I like improvements with the Cardinals. From last to tied for second with one of the worst records to 4 games over 500. That's all true. Now it's up to management to improve pitching and continue to build better. I think most of the fan base is going to be kind of angry here, but anger is sort of natural, and that doesn't necessarily mean, even if you make some heads roll, that you're going to have a better, more competitive team into the future. But I suppose the question would be, look, this team, and they said they're going to lower payroll, right? I mean, you're going to have, no matter what happens, a dramatically different lineup next year, won't you?
Absolutely. Well, I think it depends. I don't even think they know specifically where that's going to go. Now, it looks like guys like Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson, and I thought Gibson was tremendous this year, won't be asked back. So there's some veterans there. Michael Grieve had another terrific pitching performance, so maybe he's going to be a guy, a young guy that sticks with the rotation next year. But as far as the everyday lineup is concerned, is Goldie coming back? It sounds like, from what Bob Nightingale reported and other people are saying that I've talked to specifically, it doesn't look like Goldie will more than likely come back. But then you pose the question, what about Nolan Arenado? Mm-hmm. But he's got a no-trade clause. So you got some of these guys that maybe want to try to trade to look to the future. And, Mark, you got to get a no-trade clause. It has to be okay by a player. You can't trade XYZ player to Toronto without their okay. If they don't want to go to Toronto, you can't trade them. So I think that's an interesting dynamic. Do I think there will be changes? Yeah. Do I think there will be dramatic changes within the lineup? I wouldn't think that much of a dramatic change. I still think, and you can call me a homer, that's fine, but I still think when you have guys like Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman specifically, if you can get them to reach their potential, which I still believe they're young enough that they have the potential, if they're given the right development that we're talking about, I think you potentially have something there that's, could be a force in the middle of the lineup. But again, we're talking about young guys, and they still have a opportunity to develop, and hopefully they turn out to meet, their potential. But again, we've seen this before where that hasn't transpired. And I do think that you look at the development that, like a Mason Wynn. I think Mason Wynn has just been an incredible story with this ball club, Mark, just for the simple fact
that
all I ever heard about him when he was coming through the ranks, defense, defense, defense. Well, this kid was tremendous. Jose Ramirez was the only batter in all of Major League Baseball that was a better two-strike hitter than this 22-year-old rookie. Two strikes, which is unusual for almost anybody. So I think there was some development by some players, but, key players, and especially pitching, is something I think goes a long way. And I'll wrap it up by this. You go back to the early 2010s when the Cardinals were in the playoffs. But you look at all that pitching that this team had, Shelby Miller, Carlos Martinez, Trevor Rosenthal, Lance Lynn, Joe Kelly, go right on down the line, Waka. They had so much talent there, so much depth of talent, and pitching is the great equalizer. You go even to the late 2010s, you had Alex Reyes, who unfortunately had so many injuries, great kid. You had Sandy Alcantara, you had Jack Flaherty, you had Brian Helsley, you had Jordan Hicks. So many players, and I don't think we see, with a couple of exceptions, that depth from a pitching standpoint that the Cardinals have had over these many years. And again, to me, and I've learned this, working with so many of these different guys who play the game, pitching is the great equalizer. It's like we say in hockey, goaltending is the great equalizer. A goaltender can carry you to a Stanley Cup playoffs. Well, pitching can do the same thing in Major League Baseball. Yeah. And I just don't think that the pitching from a farm system standpoint, or much less the big leagues, has lived up to what we've seen over the years past.
Absolutely. A couple of things before I let you go. One, I just thought this was an interesting side note. I've always been a big fan of his, and you know, maybe the Cardinals do something like this in the future, but the Giants hired Buster Posey as their president of baseball relations. I thought that was interesting. And then, can you explain, because the Mets and the Braves are playing right now, they just wrapped the first game of a doubleheader. The Mets won 8-7, kind of a thriller there, but there are still playoff implications right now, today, right, Scott?
Absolutely. So if the Mets win game two, the Diamondbacks are in and the Braves are out. But if the Braves win this second game of the doubleheader, then they're in and the Diamondbacks are out.
So I kind of like that. Some fun excitement.
The Braves
here
are kind of in a must-win situation. You know, they had, when I left the house to go downtown, they were up 3-0. All of a sudden they're like, oh no, here comes the Mets. They're up like 6-3 or something. Like, what? What's going on? That was during the press conference, so we obviously didn't get to watch it. But, yeah, and that's the Mets playing down in Atlanta. So credit to the Mets. They've at least wrapped up a playoff spot with that game one victory.
You know, it's easy for me to say this right now because I have no memory and I can't even tell you what the last couple of years felt like. Maybe last year would be the best comparison. But I will say this. I don't remember a time when I had less interest in baseball in the month of September. I sort of gave up just because the Cardinals didn't seem like they were going anywhere. And I really have not paid close attention to Major League Baseball, which is a little unusual for me because I'm such a big fan. I hope to get kind of pulled back in with the playoffs because I am a fan. But this, I think a lot of fans can relate right now because you get so down and there's no fun factor, and then you kind of turn away from it, right? It's human nature.
Absolutely. For sure. Absolutely. When your own team is not in it, obviously the consistency of winning in this organization has been around for, you know, so many years. And so, yeah, that has it. In fact, we were talking during one of the breaks, Brad and I, and I said, look, I think the Detroit Tigers is just an incredible story. You know, this is the first time they're going to be in the playoffs in 10 years. They had the former Cardinal Jack Flaherty, who was pitching well, and they decided to be sellers, and they trade Jack Flaherty to Los Angeles to go back to his hometown, thinking they're not going to make the playoffs. And then all of a sudden they reel off like 30-some-odd wins in the last 40-some-odd games, and they're sitting there in the playoffs. I think that's a great story. I actually think the Royals is a great story as well. If you're even a casual baseball fan, check out the Royals. Bobby Witt is one of the most amazing five-tool players you'll see. There's other great kids out there that are playing that we see. You know, obviously Shohei is on the top of the list, right. Aaron Judge. But this Bobby Witt Jr., he's right there with those great players, man. He is really, really fun to watch. I'm actually looking forward to playoffs.
The Royals are kind of stumbling in, though, aren't they? They lost a few in the last week.
Yeah. They almost dropped the ball. In fact, the Minnesota Twins were the one that actually dropped the ball. But Detroit made that great surge in the last month and a half to get into the playoffs. But they still Royals are a really good, solid team. They're kind of like their team that won the World Series back in, 2015. Do a lot of pitching and a lot of defense. They steal a lot of bases, and then they set things up for Bobby Witt.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely crushes the baseball.
Except what I'm hearing here is the Royals are having more postseason success than the Cardinals, and that is not something that I want to be reminded of.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott. I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
All right, buddy.
I'll see you. I don't even know what to think of the Cardinals. I will say this. When I came back to St. Louis in 2006 and the Cardinals won the World Series, I think that was the one against Detroit, if I'm not mistaken. I took my kids, Sue, they were very young at the time, to the World Series parade. They weren't really into baseball that much, but I said, and one of the reasons I said, look, we don't know how long it's going to be. I remember going to the World Series parade in 1982, and that was a long time before 2006. I'm not really good at math, but I could give you an estimate of how many years that would be. It was a lot. So I thought, hey, boys, we're going to the World Series parade because you don't know how long it's going to be before you see something like that. Now, we got very lucky, obviously, in St. Louis. We had not only another World Series victory after 2006, but several appearances, certainly post-season appearances. That has not happened in a while. And, you know, when Scott Warman started talking about the Royals and how good Bobby Witt is and how good the Royals, that kind of hurts, right, here in St. Louis, because we're like, wait a second, we're the city that has you guys are the one that have the football team. We got the baseball team.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's a gut punch, you know, when you don't have a competitive team. And I do think, I don't know, it's hard. I've seen people out there say, look, the Cardinals and Mr. DeWitt in particular, they're tone deaf if they don't understand what the fans are demanding. I think they understand, but I also think implementing big changes is difficult, and it's going to take some time. The problem is that I think there was a lack of acknowledgement of this up until this point. I mean, why did it take another season where you don't get into the postseason? Why did it take a Katie Wool column in the Athletic the other day that pretty much, I mean, that was a devastating column. A lot of people probably didn't read it because you need a subscription, but it was not complimentary of the entire organization. It's the type of thing that when you think about players, for example, Arenado and Goldschmidt in particular, they came here because of the reputation of the Cardinals, because of the fan base, because of the willingness to compete for postseason play and championships. And I think those guys have to be a little let down, and I don't know if they're going to be part of the makeup or not in the future, but we'll find out a little bit more as we move along in the afternoon. And much more reaction here. I'm sure everyone's going to have hot takes as the week goes on, and we still have some baseball to talk about in the postseason. One other story that I want to dial into here, Sue, and we're going to kind of keep on top of everything in particular that's happening in North Carolina, but Georgia, Florida, North Carolina, just devastation from Helene, but you know what else is happening right now? You know, the only thing that's cheap in the grocery store is bananas. They're still about a quarter piece or something like that. Wow. I think I bought two yesterday. It was 47 cents. That might not stay that way. You want to know why?
Of course not.
Well, we have this big port strike that may take place. So it's the International Longshoremen's Association. They may walk off the job. And if that happens, lots of different products are going to be affected. And this is going to go back to feeling like inflation is really, really surging here. So we have just a few hours left. It's a midnight deadline. They've already begun, you know, halting a lot of activity at some of the busiest ports. So there are definitely, you're talking billions of dollars a day. I'm looking at Fox right now. They have all the container, the containers up on screen. This is a pretty significant story.
Wow.
I don't know about the particulars of the negotiations or the ins and outs, but people are going to not be able to get food and other products if this happens. And it would seem to me, you know, you have 47,000 members of this union. They have not held a strike since 1977. And of course, this always has to do with math. This is wages and benefits. And, you know, the other part of this is, and I don't know how you get around this or how you negotiate this in a collective bargaining situation, but they're worried about the automated machinery, you know, that's going into a lot of the plants. So that's part of the negotiation here. But you do not have, if this shuts down, it's shut down. There's really no other options to get products through the East and Gulf Coast ports if we don't have the longshoremen. So basically, they go on strike. We better hope that they wrap that strike up pretty quickly, because I think we're all going to feel the pinch on that. We'll take a break here at the top of the hour. When we return, I see a lot of music in there, Sue. You got a lot of Sue's News music today?
I do. Well, a little bit.
Okay. I did notice that. We have Sue's News. I do want to kind of go over the weekend. I made it out to Evolution Festival last night. We just went for the one day. We didn't go Saturday. I was a little worried about all the mud. And it was muddy last night. But then Billy Joel and Sting get rescheduled for Sunday night. It was a beautiful night. Great reviews on that concert.
Everybody I saw on social media loved it.
You know, you kind of think about these guys, not to be too, you know, grim or anything like that, but you get to the point with these artists, and you know, Jeff Lynne made it pretty clear this is the last tour, so he's not going to come back to St. Louis. But in all likelihood, will Billy Joel be back here in St. Louis? Will Sting be back here in St. Louis?
I don't know.
Maybe, because some of these guys go into their 80s, but it might be, you know, that final last appearance. So you never know. As we get into the 5 o'clock hour, we got Cusimano here this afternoon as well. Susan Crabtree, who writes for Real Clear. And we're going to get into the opposite, the opposing side of Amendment 2. That's the sports wagering ballot issue. We covered the pro side, and I'm certainly on the pro side. But there are definite things to cover and valuable information that people could take away from, you know, those that are against this amendment. We'll get into that with Brooke Foster. 525 plus an audio cut of the day coming up.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 50% off site-wide and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.